Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning and welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio on a foggy North Michigan Avenue this morning. The new president's campaign slogan was Make America Great, and in his inaugural speech, he pushed that nationalistic theme when he vowed a new era for the country, an era of America First.
From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America First. America First. Every decision on trade, on taxes, on immigration, on foreign affairs will be made to benefit American workers and American families. We must protect our borders from the ravages of other countries making our products, stealing our companies, and destroying our jobs. Protection will lead to great prosperity and strength. I will fight for you with every breath in my body, and I will never, ever let you down.
That's President Trump from his inaugural address. Joining us now on the phone is Pat Brady. Pat, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. How about you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Well, actually, I'm not sure how I'm doing. And part of the reason is yesterday afternoon, watching from the Brady briefing room, watching Sean Spicer, the new White House press secretary for the new administration, issue basically a 5-minute statement in which he made incorrect statements as he sought to chastise the media for trying to divide the country further by pointing out that the new president's inaugural speech did not draw as big a crowd as Obama's 2009 inaugural address. And he gives this, makes these false statements, spends 5 minutes doing it, and then walks out of the briefing room, doesn't even take any questions. And this was the very first statement made by the new press secretary with the new administration. And you followed, you know, that followed upon Trump going to visit the CIA and, of course, blames the dishonest media for what he said, trying to create a feud between the new president and the intelligence community, even though he's the one that likened the intelligence community to Nazis. You know, we're 48 hours into this show already, and this is what we get?
Yeah, I know Sean Spicer, and it looked like a hostage video for him.
And you make a very good point. And I've talked to Sean before too. And that's watching that, it was obvious that this was something Trump told him to do.
Yeah, and boss was watching. Better get it right. Well, I guess probably the broader point is, Rick, and we've been talking about this for 2 years. This has been going on for a long time with President now Trump. Did happen during the primary, and it just continues now. I think it's very dangerous to wage a war against the media, but short term it wins for him because the people that elected him like it. And remember when Newt Gingrich did it in the debates 4 years ago? He started going after the media, and that's when he really took off in the primary. For some reason, the group of people that elected Donald Trump like it, and I think it's a dangerous development.
And there's nothing unusual about a politician kind of using the media as a foil. That's very common, and we understand that in journalism. We know that. But to see it to this degree, and over, we're not even talking about substantive public policy here. We're talking about crowd sizes.
It was a bad first day for that. But that's again, nothing's changed since the primary. The irony of it is, I submit, it's not people like you, but CNN is probably responsible for him winning the primary because they put him on every. He got, I think they estimated $1 billion of free media because every time he talked, he put him on.
Sure, and last Thursday with Steve Cochran, I was talking about how, you know, there. This is kind of what you get, what CNN gets for, you know, promoting Trump, and they acknowledged that they were, that it was good ratings for him.
Yeah, you know, even from the inauguration, the substance of the speech, the delivery, the whole event, to what happened the last 48 hours, I don't think anybody has any idea what's going to happen. But the point I would like to make is, and yeah, I think even the Pope weighed in, and I know he doesn't speak for everybody, but he said, everybody, I think, needs to sit back and see what he does insofar as governing before we have protests and before every day is criticizing him. And I'm not defending him, but what I'm saying is it gets to be white noise if every day we're saying this, the same things that we heard all day yesterday. Just relax for a couple weeks and see exactly what he does before you start launching on him. Otherwise, it's just, I don't think it's as effective.
Well, and I think, you know, there is a point to be made, and that, yes, we need to see what is ahead. We need to you know, yes, maybe take a chill, as it were, and see. but at the same time, here again, you know, within 48 hours, we're subjected to, you know, he's back tweeting this morning. Watched protests yesterday, but was under the impression that we just had an election. Why didn't these people vote? Celebs hurt cause badly. Wow, television ratings just out. 31 million people watched the inauguration, 11 million more than the very good ratings from 4 years ago. He cares about the ratings.
Yeah, but the thing is, again, this is what went on during the primary, and I did it all the way through thinking, okay, this can't work. But it did, and he got elected. So he just
But the campaign's over. The campaign is over. It's time to govern, and you know, other than we had an executive order that basically two executive orders, one freezing implementation of regulations, and the other kind of a precursor for a repeal of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. But the public persona is about ratings, and you know, there was a question of whether Trump's actions yesterday was aimed at putting the attention back on him rather than these marches that occurred throughout the country.
And probably so, because that's what he did again throughout the campaign. Whenever something came up, there'd be a diversionary bomb somewhere. To draw, you know, true attention away from what he didn't want attention on. But all I can say right now is I think everybody's got to take a deep breath and see what happens and let him govern. He did win the election, so we've got to give him a chance to govern. I don't like the attacks on the media, and I don't like what Jim Acosta did when I thought was a little bit disrespectful when he went after him. But the media's got to push back on him. That's one thing. And again, present company excluded. But a lot of people didn't push back on him and call him out, and I think that's what you need to do. To point out to the people when you have five lies in 5 minutes.
Well, and I think that was part of the troubling factor of yesterday with Sean Spicer's appearance in the Brady briefing room, is to just deliver this statement. And, you know, there were plenty of reporters in that briefing room. I mean, everybody got summoned. I got the email, too, that this, you know, the White House is going to be making a statement. But not even.
You know, Sam Donaldson in there, Rick. You got to scream at him. To scream at Reagan. Reagan would act like he couldn't hear him.
Yes, right. Exactly. Exactly. Cup his hand to his ear and pretend that, I can't quite hear you over there.
And they'd walk in the back door.
Exactly. Exactly. We're talking to Pat Brady, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. We're speaking with Pat Brady, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. I had mentioned about the new president's tweet this morning about the television ratings just out. 31 million people watched the inauguration, 11 million more than the very good ratings from 4 years ago. Just to put that 31 million people in perspective, that's nearly 7 million fewer than Obama's first inauguration 8 years ago, and 11 million fewer than 36 years ago, which was Ronald Reagan's first inauguration. So just to put things in perspective, I think it's always good to do that. We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Good morning, Rick. Mr. Brady, we just heard a piece from when Mr. Trump was advocating protectionism. That goes contrary to one of the most fundamental principles of the Republican Party, and particularly some of the leadership, Paul Ryan, and I know yourself, you are the advocates of free market. So I just want you to give me an assessment. Is that going to cause any tension within the party, or how do you see this playing out?
Thank you, Ron. And Pat, I was going to bring that up as well, but I thought I'd let Ron do it, because I found that his use of the word, you know, protectionism is a very kind of remarkable term to use in laying out kind of a goal of this new administration.
Yeah, and Ron makes a great point going back to Reagan and even before that the Republican Party has traditionally not been a protectionist party. We believe in open markets, global open markets, and we believe that's the best way for people to get the best products at the cheapest prices. And we've never advocated for protectionism. Now, like you said, we just heard it in the speech, we heard it in the campaign, and he got elected on that. Is it going to cause tension? Yeah, probably, because there's a conservative wing of the Republican Party in Congress, or the free trade wing, and they're not going to like that. But I think with a guy like Donald Trump, who really doesn't have a track record of consistent ideology on anything, I think he's a deal guy. And if we're going to do something on trade, it's going to be something that won't be nearly as
dramatic.
Dramatic as what he said in his inaugural. But that to me was just amped up campaign rhetoric. So we got Paul Ryan, who I think is a conservative and a deep thinker, and they're going to have to work together to get this done. But Ron makes a great point. And that was one of the issues I raised during the campaign. We're have never been a protectionist party. We've always been free traders. So we have a president now who doesn't believe that, but that's what got him elected.
I want to ask you, you've known Reince Priebus for years, and you know, now as the chief of staff for this president, it has to be, I mean, being chief of staff for any president is a difficult job, but it has to be especially kind of different for Priebus because, you know, with his relationship with Paul Ryan and kind of not being one of the initial insiders with Trump, it seems like kind of trying to dance in two different places.
Yeah, I think Reince is uniquely equipped for that job, and I agree with you. It's going to be difficult, and he's a very smart guy. He's a very calm guy. He's a very organized guy, and he's one of the hardest working people I've ever met. So hopefully he can be the organizational guy behind the president that can bridge those gaps. And I hear other reports that he's not necessarily the conduit to Congress, but I think he is. But if there's anybody that can do it, it's him. He's got the perfect temperament to handle President Trump, I think. And they didn't always have a great relationship early on. If you remember, Reince had to fly up there and get Trump to sign a pledge that he would vote for a Republican if he didn't win the primary. Remember that early on in the primary campaign. But they became good friends and developed a good working relationship throughout the campaign. Reince flew around the country with him for months. And if it wasn't for the RNC, chances are Donald Trump wouldn't have won because – his campaign had no ground game, and they, for the first time that I can ever recall, relied exclusively on the Republican National Committee for their get out the vote effort. So I think they have a good relationship, but he's got this, I think, the perfect temperament for it.
I wanted to ask you too about the cabinet process, the hearing process that's going on, because we now have two members of the cabinet that have been confirmed, but still a vast number of cabinet appointees that are still in confirmation hearings. And just in some cases, it just seems questionable about how well prepared these people were, or even how well the incoming administration had vetted these people.
Yeah, I agree. It seemed that some of these folks weren't prepped before they got in there. But I don't think there's been any fatal blows so far. But I think probably the broader question is, and I watched a lot of these hearings, and sometimes I watch, I go, would you just ask the question? Don't make a statement. There's probably 10 questions you could ask.
Right, sure. And you know, it's
the
every
process is kind of.
Sure, every member of the Senate is treating it as their, you know, their kind of their filibuster to get their camera time as well.
Yeah, I don't know how many minutes they get, 3 or 6 or whatever, but they take up 80% of the time making a statement and then ask one question. But I do think there, and this was the buzz in Washington when I was out there this week, a lot of people are happy with a lot of these cabinet picks. Not all of them, but I think the Secretary of State pick is going to turn out to be a great pick. To me, he was more of a James Baker. Just a real guy that knows the world and from the business side and just knows the world anyway. So some of the picks, I think, have been well received, but some of these folks have had problems. I do agree it's lack of prep, which to me kind of represents disorganization.
And I have to say, I mean, you know, there were obviously concerns about Rex Tillerson, the nominee for Secretary of State, coming off of the issues involving Russia hacking and his relationship with Vladimir Putin. But at the same time, there is that sense that in many cases that Tillerson is actually like the adult in the room among these picks.
I agree completely. And I saw the exchange with Senator Rubio and Rex Tillerson. And I that's exactly what I got to go. Well, this isn't the adult in the room. And he reminds me of James Baker, who I thought was one of our greatest. And the same, I've been here. I understand this. I'm not going to say things I shouldn't be saying because I don't know all the facts. I thought he was very good. And it's one thing I think we need. And I was hoping the president was going to talk more about it in his State of the Union. But we need to reset our foreign policy and our national security, I think. And I think he's a good guy to do it. We want no more leading from behind.
Right. But at the same point, when you mentioned the lack of kind of addressing foreign policy in his speech. And, of course, you know, that was a factor in this election as well, with Hillary Clinton as a former Secretary of State, but also, you know, that kind of question about where has U.S. foreign policy gone during the tenure of Barack Obama and, you know, had America, quote, gone soft kind of thing. And other than, you know, once again, a vow to get rid of ISIS and rid the world of Islamic-based terrorism, extreme Islamist terrorism, nothing on foreign policy.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You could read the speech and watch it, and it, to me, depending on who's watching it, the people that voted for him and like that, it was a great speech. On the other side of the coin, you see the criticisms, even some conservative columnists saying it's probably the worst inauguration speech in the history of the country. Now, I don't know who's right or who's wrong, but the president stayed with what got him elected, and it was very simplistic on foreign policies. We're going to destroy ISIS. It certainly wasn't JFK or Reagan or anybody else.
But it was very dark, though. And again, kind of following the themes that got him elected, but it was just painting this very dark picture of the United States. And in fact,
yeah, carnage is not a great word to use in one of those speeches, I don't think. He said carnage in the cities or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, we played that. Yes, we played that clip where he was talking about the problems in the inner cities and referred to it as carnage.
Well, I hope he's serious about that, because where we live, we have a big problem in the city with crime and people getting shot, and we might need a federal solution to it if something doesn't happen soon. So I hope he's serious about concentrating on that. But I do agree it was dark, but again, this is the whole thing is so non-traditional. Who knows? And maybe we're in a different era. I don't know. A lot of people that I talk to in D.C. are worried this is going to wear thin quickly. And once we start focusing on the midterms and people see Trump at 35%, they're going to run away from him on the Republican side. But if he has a couple legislative successes right out of the box, maybe an infrastructure bill or a repeal and replace of Obamacare, this all might change and we all might be wrong again. But we just got to wait and see.
Wait and see. That is,
well, the media.
Yeah, no, and I'm not making fun of you, but I think yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is such, we're in such uncharted territory here that, and you know, still to be seen what is the issue of governance and governing. And that's, you know, that's a dance that also includes the Congress.
Yeah, and there's been some great articles in the last couple of weeks and even today about the brilliance of the founding fathers setting up a system of checks and balances. So even as powerful as the president is, there's still three branches of government. But I do think that we need to give him time to govern. I've said this since Election Day. He's got to give him a chance. And then if you have criticisms on what he does, like with the way that he's handling the media, that's fair game. But to come out and start railing on him before he's even done anything, to me, is not productive.
That's Pat Brady, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. Pat, back from Washington. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Rick. We'll see you around. Thanks.
We'll be back with more right after this.